Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host. Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast for October 29th, 2012. I'm Ricky Enger.
I'm Buddy Brannon.
I'm Joe Steinkamp. Hey, this is different. I don't think we've done this Transformer configuration before.
No, that's an interesting lineup.
Like Skyfire or Metropolis or one of those other bigger Transformers.
Just in time for Halloween. It could be a really scary lineup.
Ooh, spooky. Will haunt your MP3 player.
Well, one thing I don't think we should be scared of is Windows 8, because it's here, whether
don't
we
fear
like
the bomber.
It or not.
Yeah, agreed. Windows 8 is out and about. It released on the 26th. You have two configurations in the desktop version. You have Windows Pro and just Windows 8. So not home, not starter, not something something premium-ish. So
this
just
is a
two
good
versions.
Thing.
This
Agreed.
Is a very good thing.
Yeah,
there's still room for confusion, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I don't know what RT and whatever, but yeah, right. I don't know what Microsoft was thinking with 7 releasing like 48 different versions of it.
Vista was worse. No, Vista was 8. Starter, home premium, pro, ultimate, enterprise, and I'm missing one or something like that. Okay, and that's not including the N versions.
You should probably be ashamed to know that much.
I was going to say, what does this say about you that you still know that many?
that I did lots of presentations when I was a government employee about accessibility on Windows Vista. I had to make training DVDs and write tests about them.
32 and 64-bit versions of all.
Oh, that's true too.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
And the only way to get that was in the box of Ultimate. But from what I understand from Richard Wells, our QA person here at Serotalk, that on the Pro Edition, you get both 32 and 64 in the box, which is kind of interesting because at one point they were talking that it was just going to be 64 moving forward. But once again, Microsoft relents for legacy. But just about everywhere, but in the case of the start screen, we can't call it a start menu anymore.
It's yeah, you can't call screen. Anything Metro either, although I'm still seeing tech journalists do that.
It's kind of hard not to be honest with you, because the term Windows Store app or Windows app or Windows New UI app that have all come after the retirement of Metro due to a lawsuit from a German company, or a threat of a lawsuit, shall I say, required Microsoft to rename the start screen from what it was going to be called Metro to this. Now, the start screen is very interesting because if you can learn it on one device, it will allow you to kind of sort of know all the devices, be that Xbox 360, Windows Phone 8, or Surface/RT.
It's interesting to me to watch the tech journalists talk about Windows 8. Because normally you see something very polarized. People either really love it or really hate it. And with this, there's still some polarized reaction, but it's within the same person. This person both loves it and hates it.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I saw that. And if you ask me, depending on what day of the week you ask me, I might like it or I might not like it. I might like the new interface. I might hate the new interface. It all depends. But somebody said that Windows 8 is going to force people to learn a new Windows that they haven't had to do since Windows 95.
I don't disagree with that.
I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, between Windows 3.1 and 95 was a lot different. And this is a whole lot different even again.
Well, you've got so much context-sensitive stuff, and I don't mean just using the right click or the applications key. You have the charm bar, which is Windows C. And in fact, pro tip, if you really, really, really want to save yourself trouble and you're using Windows 8, learn Windows X, because that kind of lets you jump real quick between a lot of things at one time and will save you a lot of headache of, where did they move so-and-so to, or I can't find this.
But I guess Windows X will probably give some of us headaches from people using Windows X that probably shouldn't be using Windows X.
Possibly. But it's a good thing to know that these things exist. It might not be good to go down the rabbit hole with both feet on them until you've done some research.
Yeah, the whole, like, what happens if I press this button thing? Maybe not such a great idea all the time.
The cool thing in Windows 8, though, is that you can actually restore the system back to defaults without altering your data or your music or your documents. They've actually sectioned it off in a lot of ways. So if you do have to do something radical, or if you have to find yourself in the middle of a terrible virus epidemic, or you've loaded a program and it's really kind of messed you up, the ability to kind of jump back is even better than it used to be with Windows Restore.
Yeah, we're definitely hoping for fewer reformat and reinstalls.
Yeah, that is a key, especially if you're trying something out to see if it's, you know, going to work with you accessibly with your screen reader or not. Internet Explorer 10 by default. Oh, by the way, Internet Explorer 10 is coming to Windows 7 starting next month in a preview. That doesn't mean that it's coming out of all the way or that it's out officially. It's another preview, but it does indicate that Windows 7 and IE 10 are going to be the new standards for Microsoft. Note that I say Windows 7. This won't be backwards compatible to Vista or anything below. And they seem to be drawing a line in the sand about that. Office 2013 seems to be looking much towards the future of Windows 7 and up. And even so much that the Register was reporting earlier this week that there might not be a Service Pack 2 for Windows 7, which in a way I guess doesn't surprise me, because Microsoft is in this really unfortunate position of being able to have cake and eat it too, in which, you know, here's Windows 8 and you should be on Windows 8. But if you don't like it, Windows 7 will still exist. But we don't want Windows 7 to become Windows XP, so don't get comfortable.
Yeah, this is going to be kind of a difficult tightrope for them to walk. And there's really no shortage of tightropes for Microsoft at this point. I mean, they're really hedging their bets with the tablet market as well. And I think they're basically thinking this has to work. We have to remain important, even as the... I don't want to get into the whole death of the PC and so on, because I don't think the PC is dead by any means, but it can't be denied that tablets are becoming a bigger and bigger part of the consumer experience. And so Microsoft has to become a part of this market. They're no longer just a software company. You know, they've got Xbox, and that is obviously very successful. Now they're going for Windows RT, and they showed off the Surface tablets this week. And it was kind of interesting reading articles about this. If you'll check out the show notes, you'll see a couple of them. And as they talk about the tablet, you can sort of read a bit of defensiveness here, as Microsoft says, well, here are some trade-offs that we had to make. No, the screen is not as good as what you see on some other things, but here, let us talk tech jargon for an hour about why we made this decision about this display. And see, look, it's really, really good, we promise. Yeah, we skimped on it a little bit, but we had a really good reason. And so, you know, don't beat us up for that.
The tightrope continues, because as an app developer, Apple can force you to do things. They can force you in a way like with Retina. You don't have to do Retina, but man, will your stuff look really ugly. So really, it's in your best interest to upgrade all your stuff to make it look Retina. And that's, you know, that can be debated whether that's on purpose or not, or a technical limitation. Microsoft tends not to be as forceful with developers in the same way. In fact, Microsoft loves to have legacy as best they can. And I'm sure there's probably some upscaling and some legacy issues. And also, to be able to port as many apps over to it as it can, or some other things that I don't want to go too deep down on this, because it gets kind of boring, really. But to be fair, what they have here is a different way of approach, in that you could technically have a Windows 8 laptop and detach the screen and that become your tablet. And to the point that the chips have gotten so small that it could have its own chips, its own video card, whatever, and have a completely different and passable experience. And then when you're ready to do power computing, reattach that back to the core laptop, a laptop, then charge your tablet and continue on with only learning one interface and only really technically having one device that serve two mediums. And the touchscreen interface is really interesting for Microsoft in that, again, we're back to the contextual. They put hotspots at the top corner of the screen, left, all four corners, actually. So if you put your finger there and hold it, you'll get different things to pop up. If you swipe the right side of the screen, you'll get the charms bar. There's just certain things that Microsoft has thought about where, you know, this would work well in a tablet environment. And unfortunately, we don't have any tablets yet to be able to play with that and say what's going on yet. Mr. Calvo is actually going to play with the Surface and talk about it on a later podcast. But where it gets kind of funky is, how do you then tell mouse-driven users to make that work? How do you then, you know, do that with hotkeys? How do you then do the same implementation? And that's where it gets kind of kludgy, is because it's not the same as doing a touchscreen. Now, some laptops, especially new laptops, have trackpads that let you do something like what the Surface does. Surfer, I love that. And there's even talk that there's going to be kind of like the Mac trackpad available for Surface that'll let you do some of the swiping and gesturing as well. And that's still to come. And that's the big thing, is if you're going to put Windows 8 on an existing system, your experience, like in previous Windows, is going to be different than buying it on hardware that supports it. And it's never been more so than with the touch. So a lot of pundits are saying one thing, and this happens with the iPhone. We've saw this with iPhone 5. It's not that different. No, it's just iteration. It didn't evolve. I love it. It's light. It's easy. It's great. A fantastic. They have to touch it. They really do. And I think that's what we're going to see over the next couple of months, is people kind of backtrack a little bit and go, okay, now I sort of see where Microsoft was going.
Couple of interesting things to mention about the tablets while we're talking here. The first is they're doing smart covers for the tablets. And I'm not exactly sure how this works. It's a little different from what you were talking about as far as detaching a screen from a laptop and making that a tablet. For the Surface tablets, they've got smart covers where you place this thing on the tablet and somehow the experience is different, such that you can rest your hands on the keyboard and then type just as you would on a regular keyboard. Now, I don't know if there is any tactile feedback, you know, any springiness or anything like that as you do this, but whatever the case, you have this different typing experience that is supposed to more closely mimic a traditional keyboard. That's kind of cool. I want to see how that works. And the other thing is, we've kind of alluded to it, I suppose, because we were talking about Mr. Calvo testing a Surface tablet. It has been confirmed that there will be Narrator on Windows RT, which is what is running on Surface. And we already know that RT is not powering Windows Phone 8, so we're not going anywhere with Windows Phone 8. But tablets, that's going to be a very interesting ecosystem to explore.
So that these covers, there's some that have this kind of type on glass, like if you were typing on your iPhone. And then there's some that actually have buttons, and they call them two different things. So that's even back to the article that we have here about confusion. So not only do you have the confusion in that Windows RT doesn't really have a desktop the way that a Windows 8 computer does, and there are tablets to come that will let you have a Windows 8 desktop mode as well as the Windows Store app mode. And that's a big difference, because if you can't get to your desktop, then there's like tons and tons and tons of apps that you won't be able to use because they haven't been configured for Windows RT Surface. Think of it like your iOS devices and Macs. There is a difference between the iOS store and the Mac store. And just because you have it on the Mac store doesn't mean it runs on iOS and tangentially for the other. So this is kind of Microsoft, again, kind of doing some photocopying and doing something that's very similar. But it's one thing to look at it from iOS, which has had years and years and years to build up an app store, to Microsoft coming out the gate with 5,500 apps. Remember, we've talked about this before. It's not necessarily the numbers you have. It's, does it have the apps you want? And that's sometimes where it gets lost in conversation, is some people want to do a numbers-to-numbers comparison. Now, some apps have all been updating. In fact, you might be seeing traditional apps that you use on Windows 7 updating, be that Skype, Windows Live Messenger, or the entire Windows Essentials suite, in fact, and some other apps that you may be using. Even my Kodak printer yesterday updated its drivers for Windows 8. I'm just going to come out and say, if you're running an older system, 3 years or older, you're going to have a real weird experience with Windows 8. That's on top of the learning curve of the new menus and the new experiences and stuff like that. And there'll be videos and tutorials and websites to help you with that. But your experience, as with many cases in Windows, your experience will probably be better on a newer system or buying a new computer that's more tailor-made for Windows 8. You can upgrade for $39 to start to be able to jump your Windows computers to Windows 8. I've even seen deals out there for Windows 8 Pro for $69. Walmart is selling it for that much. So if you're an early adopter and you really want this experience, it's incredibly affordable. I can't think of any time where Windows has been more affordable for those tech enthusiasts who want to jump to the new version of Windows. Because usually, man, I've spent as much as $230 on a copy of Windows in its first week to be able to use it officially.
And if you're going to be using Windows 8, you're going to have some assistive technology to work on it. Well, actually, you don't have to, given that Narrator is a part of Windows 8 and is vastly improved. With that said,
looks suspiciously like VoiceOver.
Yeah, indeed. I wonder how that happened.
Well, we always talk about universal design. Yeah, so
it's funny. It looks like a cross between VoiceOver and what's it called? ChromeVox.
ChromeVox. Yes.
Suspiciously, which I always like thought, a cross between those two things. It's
ChromeOver. No, that's go. What you do when you're going bald.
That sounds more like you're trying to avoid baldness. What are you? You have a ChromeOver.
So there you go.
Terrible.
Our review of Narrator. It's the ChromeOver. But if you're still
surprisingly
looking
useful,
to
though
use...
surprisingly, I mean, it don't confuse it with Windows 7 Narrator. Seriously, it's
no.
It's a lot
way
better.
Past the days of foreground window.
It's a lot better.
I really like the text to speech on it as well.
Yeah, the Dave voice is phenomenal.
Goes without saying that it's a vast improvement over Microsoft Sam, but.
And having hotkeys like Windows Enter to be able to just launch it. And there's a way to do it on Surface as well to be able to launch Narrator. I can't remember exactly what it is. I think it's like hold a button and up on the volume key or down on the volume key. But there's a physical way to bring it up on Surface.
But you still will not be able to independently install.
That's unfortunate. I would really like to have seen... Especially
that's a legacy thing again until they can push people forward on hardware.
But let's take the Surface tablet then.
Well,
now
you might be
right
able
now,
to do something
only,
with it. We don't know.
Yeah, we only have this is the reference tablet, and there are going to be other tablets running Surface. But the issue of hardware being a problem when you're setting up, that wouldn't be true if you're having to redo your Surface tablet. Microsoft knows what hardware is in there. And could make things work for that. But we're not there yet, sadly.
If they're looking at other people, though, and they're taking cues from other people, it's a good sign that as these things become more expected, then it's a bigger checklist for the gotta-haves before you release. And I, everybody's got to start somewhere, including Apple. Apple did it in Tiger and worked on VoiceOver for years before it ever came over to the 3GS. So they had a good running start, and I think everybody else is kind of sort of getting there. Look at the vast improvements between, say, TalkBack and Android 1.6 versus 4.1, and we're hoping to even see more in this week's announcement of 4.2. But that isn't the only release of something that involves the word window and 8. Window Eyes 8 went out to the public. That beta that we talked about the previous week is now available.
That's right. So you can play with several things that they've done there. They've updated support for Java. They're doing browse mode updates and, of course, the ability to use this in safe mode. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. This is, by the way, what you're going to want to use if you have Windows 8. You're going to want to check out this beta for that because the support isn't there for Windows 8 in 7.5 of Window Eyes. Also, JAWS 14, and this is the official release, that's out now. And once again, this is what you're going to want to use if you are using Windows 8. Magic version 12 is out as well. So there you have it as far as lots of AT updates to kind of coincide with the Windows 8 release.
And be sure to check the show notes over at serotalk.com. You'll find the link to get you over to Magic 12, where you can hear Dusty Voorhees himself talk about the product and what's new in Magic 12. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that on High Contrast.
You know what? Using a Braille display as a Braille display to just read stuff and all that, that is so passe.
That is so last year.
I know, right? Why wouldn't you use this thing for games like Dotris? This is a version of Tetris that uses Braille dots, and you can play this on, as far as I know, any Braille display, right?
I haven't tried it.
Yeah, I haven't either. If there are Dotris fans out there, please let us know what you think about this game. We've got the link in the show notes there for your downloading pleasure. I'd love to know just how well this works. I've always been vaguely curious about Tetris, and to see this kind of represented in Braille sounds pretty neat. I think all of us on this particular show are really good at playing the radio and not much else in terms of musical instruments. Well, I play a couple of things, but not necessarily very well.
Yeah, we play with musical instruments.
There you go. I like that. However, there are plenty of people who do this professionally. And for those who do, it's well worth checking out this blog post from Brian Hartgen, talking about his thoughts on musicians, vocalists, and engineers, and the types of audio software that can be used accessibly on Windows. He talks about Cakewalk, Sonar, and a couple of other things, and describes what you might want to use in terms of screen readers and scripts and the like to get the most out of that software that you're looking at.
Well, coming up after the break, we didn't forget about the Apple news. No, 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 not by any stretch of the imagination. So we've still got that coming. And in Roundabout, we will find out how Jamie runs marathons, what he smells like afterwards, and where he lost his iPhone. No, yeah, just wait. It'll all make sense very soon on Podcast 130.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet, with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the Accessibility Anywhere people.
Welcome back to the Serotalk podcast, and we have some news from this company called, I don't know, what's this, Apple Play.
Yeah, that's the French
play. Apple Play.
There you go.
Apple Play. Yes.
They are. They're always quiet. They hardly ever make any news. What did they announce now?
I don't know. Some little thing. They had some press event. And they talked about some iPad. iPad. Okay. So Apple has released, and again, as I said on Triple Click Home, I have to say, I'm happy to see that my record remains intact.
Woohoo!
Yay! You know, I got to...
Everything you predict doesn't happen.
I got to say, I don't know of anybody that has more fun with being wrong than I do, but...
I have some lottery numbers I need you not to pick.
Yeah, that number will never make it.
There you go.
That one won't do, no. So they released the iPad mini, and also an updated iPad 4th generation, which we thought, surely not, but they did. And that's we're wondering how people are going to react to that.
Built-in obsolescence at its finest.
Yes, you'll hear, although, I mean, in fairness, I mean, it's not that much different. I mean, okay, it's got the A6 chip and the Lightning connector. I think it was all about the Lightning connector. But so we have...
So yeah. A lot of buddies' comments are on Triple Click.
Yes.
So check out tripleclickhome.com or Twitter/tripleclickhome, where we have even more Apple news. That is a great place to catch up. Good, bad, indifferent, lots of opinions on Apple over there on that feed. We update it a lot.
So one article we have here talks about how Apple under Tim Cook is a better Apple than the one under Steve Jobs. And this is actually something that we alluded to a bit on Triple Click. Some might call this blasphemy. I think there's some legitimacy here, really. Tim Cook has some strengths that Steve Jobs really didn't have. And like I say, we alluded to this before on Triple Click, and you can hear that on Triple Click. For one thing, he really, the stock price has increased by a couple 100% under Tim Cook. He's really tightened up the supply chain, and he's really down with that, making sure that's running like a well-oiled machine. But the big thing that I really think that, and I don't recall if this article addressed it or not, but I really think that one way that Tim Cook is really putting a new face on Apple really is in the way that he handles people. Steve Jobs, you can say a lot about Steve Jobs, but one thing that you could never say about Steve Jobs is that he was a people person, because he really wasn't.
Not so much.
Really, yes, wasn't.
The book is filled with people who would not say that.
Yeah, people.
If you read the Isaacson book.
Exactly,
wow.
Yeah. People would admired him. People gave him their best work. People wanted to work for him, so on and so forth. But nobody could say he was warm and fuzzy. Nobody could say that Steve Jobs, you know, was the kind of guy that you could walk up to, or he'd walk up to you and tell you you're doing a good job. He would instead say, the color on that is slightly wrong.
It's the wrong shade of yellow.
It's the wrong shade of yellow, yes. You would never get the apology from Steve Jobs about the Apple Maps app that we got from Tim Cook.
No.
You'd never see
no,
that.
No, absolutely.
Never.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I really think that Tim's put a friendlier face on Apple. So, yeah, in a lot of ways, I think that there's a lot to be said for this.
I don't think he is good at being a showman. He
doesn't have
the reality distortion field.
He doesn't have, but I really think, you know, a lot of the other stuff that he does have, really, I don't think he needs it as much. On the other hand, he is going to be living in Steve Jobs' shadow. I mean, a year later, people are still going, what's this company going to do without Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
How would Steve Jobs handle? Well, you know, Steve Jobs isn't around anymore, so we can't ask him. And, you know, so.
Unless you are a psychic, I saw an article recently where, the psychic is in communication with Mr. Jobs and says that he has lots of lessons to learn before moving on to his next life. So, you know, there you have it.
But no, he doesn't have the showmanship that Steve Jobs had, and there are no two ways about that. But as far as
I think that played into it this week, though. Okay, so inside baseball, what I said internally here was Apple doing the stream so people could watch it live was because they knew that they had some really bitter pills for people to swallow, and by presenting that live allowed them to get around people like Twit and others from kind of taking the message, massaging it, and kind of poo-pooing it before it ever really got forward. So for those who really follow Apple, for those who love Apple, this was an opportunity for them to get kind of the filter-free message. And because of that, I was able to watch some of the inflection and some of the presentation and some of the feel. And it, you know, for all the fun I've made over the years about magical and all that, it does work. It totally, totally works. And Steve was very much that guy that would do these presentations for a week before they would go with it. I mean, like all the way down to the pedestal needs to raise slower so people can really see this device and all of that. And so those were, you know, incredibly anal-driven presentations, and it does make the medicine go down a little better. And let's come down to that. Some of the products that were announced this week kind of fall into what Buddy has said on other podcasts, what Ricky and I have said on other podcasts, and it made me uncomfortable because Apple works best when it is making you feel good about the product you just bought, and that it's a life-affirming choice that you've made, and it fits within the boutique ideal. But when you become somebody with $121 billion, and you sell 100 million of anything, you're no longer a boutique. This is something that they're going to struggle with. And slowly but surely, they're getting big enough that they can't turn on a dime or make these large decisions anymore without affecting people, aka Microsoft. I said it. Yes, I did. And that's where I come in on some of these announcements. I think the MacBook Pro was a great idea, the 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Okay, I called Retina.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you still get the Pro that isn't Retina?
Yes, you can.
You can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we talked about that on TripleClick
too. I mean, that's a decent laptop. It meets a lot of needs, and I think that's great because eventually they're going to have to do that throughout the line. It's a little pricey to start. Some people feel like it's not worth it, but I mean, if that's the kind of form factor you're looking for, and you don't want to make the
have Retina, then
yeah, and you don't want to make the transition to go to Air. Maybe you do need some of the more beefier hardware. Well, then there's an option, which I think is good. I love the new iMacs, flat out. I'm okay with losing the SuperDrive. I think some of the concessions they made and the design is really sweet. And coming in at $1,299, it's a little more. And no, it's not Retina. But it's 21 inches and 27 inches, and that's
just
glorious.
It's more than a PC, but I got to tell you, I mean, the iMac has always started at $1,299, so they've increased performance and kept the price point the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's still the same. Right.
And they refreshed the minis.
I didn't think they'd come out with a new iMac. I thought that they pretty much had decided we're done with that, but I'm glad they did.
I didn't think they'd refresh it. I mean, literally revision.
It's a whole new thing. I'm really interested to see what this Fusion Drive is going to look like and how that's going to actually work.
Me too.
Okay, here's my prediction. This is one more step towards iOS being the dominant operating system because that could fit right on the SSD part of the Fusion Drive. And to explain everybody what that is, it's part hard drive that you traditionally know, and then it's part flash memory-like in what's called a solid-state drive. And you can actually put things on one drive to load incredibly faster, like OS X, the Mac operating system, can be loaded in the flash. So that way it just comes up instantaneous, and then when it has to do heavier-duty things or get more data that's really large, it can go over and get it from the traditional platter drive that we know. And that's pretty impressive. And it also kind of takes the sting out of the SuperDrive. Now, if you do have optical discs, you're not left in the lurch. They actually have a peripheral that you can stick to the iMac that allows you to still have a disk drive if you want. But the design of this thing, I've got to go to the Apple Store and look at it because just from the pictures and all, it made me look at my iMac and think it was a gigantic brick. And and here's where we come to the controversial part. And that is iPad 4 seems a little soon on the refresh cycle. And by the way, all you iPad 3 owners, you new iPads, come on in. The water's fine. We iPad 1 users have been sitting in obsolescence for a while. So jump in the pool. It's great. So you get the iPad 2 now still and the iPad 4. In fact, if you bought an iPad 3 or the new iPad or whatever that we wanted to call it, but the iPad 3rd gen.
It's like a collector's item now.
Yeah. And if you bought it in the last 30 days, Apple will trade it in on a newer one. So that's kind of neat. But here's where I differ with Buddy. Listening to people use iPhone 5s and Siri and playing with it, the physical cliff between the A6 processor and any of the older processors to me is vast, is huge. And in my mind, Apple has a tendency to draw that line in the sand and say, okay, you're voted off the island. And I think what they had to do here is they had to do something to really make those iPads sell because they're running cross message if they continue to sell the new iPad while all this other tech is coming out. And, you know, for tech support reasons, it's easier to have everybody on the same platform. So having
those new
iPads,
but they're still selling the iPad 2, which is very, very strange.
I
don't understand why they didn't drop that.
And 16 gig,
right? Which is still okay. I think the 16 gig sells really well. I feel like
7 months.
Yes, there is a reason for people to some degree to be upset. Because Apple has changed their release schedule. I only had this for 7 months. I should have gotten another 5 months of having the latest and greatest thing before they did anything. With that said, did your needs change between the day before the new release and the day of? For a lot of people, no.
Depends on what you want to do.
If you want to have the latest and greatest just for the sake of having the latest and greatest, then awesome. Go be angry about how quickly they refreshed this. But, you know, the day before the release, a lot of people were, my iPad 3 is just fine for me. I still have all these cables lying around for my iPhone 4. Don't need a lightning cable. Don't want it. Blah, blah, blah. Then it comes out, oh, how dare you? This thing is obsolescing on my desk as we speak. I can't do anything with this.
Yeah, Apple's never done that before.
Well, but that seems a little odd. At this point, that's just psychological.
That's my point. Well, I really feel like
that's how they get sales. They drive the concept of sales through a cyclical nature, through the idea that the latest is the best and the last thing you just bought, no matter how long ago.
Yeah, but that's not exclusive. That's not exclusive to Apple. Come on. No.
Yeah. Okay.
Most other things have longer cycles. If you look at it from Windows, there's 3 years. If you look at it from gaming systems, there's 6 years. If you look at it from other product cycles, they're not refreshing every quote unquote 7 months. Well, even Android on most carriers takes about 12 to 16 months before they refresh some of their phone lines. Droid 3 being the exception, because that was just a garbage piece of stuff. So it does happen, but it's not that everybody bases their cycle on it or focuses on it as a key marketing point. Now, this gets into our next discussion, which is the iPad mini. For them to go in this direction and talk about how great Retina is for the last year on every product release.
Yeah,
and then turn around and say, yeah, but the 7-inch doesn't have
this
it.
This iPad mini thing was just perplexing to me. And the new iPad 4 fourth gen was a bit too. I just and on triple click you're gonna hear all of our opinions on that and how perplexed we all are with it.
But in the case of the mini, here's an iPad that is me too, because iPad's sales were slowing, which is another reason why some people think that they refreshed it, that the iPad 3 was not selling enough, and there's even the conspiracy theory that they planned this all along and that the iPad 3 was just a culmination of leftover parts in the bins at Foxconn, on and on and on. I don't know if I can subscribe to that, although Apple does have a tendency to buy tons of parts and move the older parts to other, you know, units in order to use them because they've already bought them. And that makes sense in some ways. It does fragment the iOS landscape because the experience you're going to have on this device is not the same as the one you're going to have on this other device over here. And where that comes into play for me is $329 to start for an iPad mini versus $299 to start for a Retina enabled iPod. That's in the shape of the iPhone 5. This really muddies the waters for me, and it's what I feared was going to happen.
The thing that really perplexes me is the price point versus what's actually in the thing. Now, a lot of people are theorizing that the biggest reason Apple came out with the iPad mini is because they didn't want to be left out of the 7-inch tablet market. They see Google and Amazon making all this money with these 7-inch tablets, and they said, I want a piece of this too. But now, why then are you charging $329 for this iPad mini? And in comparison, you have a $199 Nexus tablet, or perhaps I should say $249 because that's the 16 gig Nexus.
Well, at the time that we record this, because we haven't hit the Google
announcement. Things may change.
Right. So there's a possibility that it could be 32 gig and 16 gig and the 8 gets phased out. But in any case, there's even a possibility of a $99 Nexus, which, you know.
Yeah, but let's talk about where we are today. If you're looking at a 16 gig Nexus, it has a quad-core processor in it, whereas the iPad's is dual. The screen resolution on the Nexus is better than that of the iPad mini. And now the iPad mini is lighter and thinner, of course, but is that worth the increase in price? And I feel like this is a big house of cards, and something is going to make it tumble down, whether it becomes a supply chain nightmare or whether it's just too much for marketing to keep up with as far as all of these different devices. And why would you buy this one, that one, the other one? Even the most rabid Apple fanboy or girl cannot purchase every single thing that Apple releases ever, especially not as you continue to add things to this. I feel like Apple could have remained a little bit lofty, you know, and said, we don't need to compete in this market. We're fine.
I think they should have.
And nobody would have objected to that. And they, yeah, they should have.
I really don't think that the 7-inch thing was a great
didn't.
Move. I really don't.
And no GPS, which is one.
No GPS, no NFC. And NFC people aren't using it a lot yet, but they will be. And it's kind of odd that it's missing. Well,
they're giving themselves room to grow the product. But
they put it at a price point where it simply does not make sense unless you are absolutely rabid about Apple and Apple only. It feels like purchasing a pair of jeans for $300 just because it has Tommy Hilfiger on it. The functionality of this garment is not any better because it costs more.
When Buddy was on this podcast last, we talked about people just buying Sony for the fact that it was Sony. And that scares me because, you know, history repeats. And some people are saying, okay, this is it. That's the end of Apple. No. The momentum is way too big and way too large, and that's not going to happen. And they're way too smart.
Apple's not going to die immediately,
Samsung announced today that at the day of recording that they ship 2 phones for every iPhone sold. You could argue ship versus sell. I hear you, but still, that's a market-driven situation.
Yeah, and to what kind of phones?
Again, you can play statisticals all day long. But to say that the Nexus in 4 months hasn't affected Apple's tablet dominance.
Of course it has.
Is crazy because they're selling tons of those things at a lower price point, and it's not a bad product. Ricky and I both have Nexus 7s, and I really enjoyed the device, and it's got a lot of good things going for it, accessibility-wise or other. But here's my issue, is that standing here with an iPad 1 in my hand, why do I want to jump and buy this when I already know you have these other products that are going to make it obsolete in 7 months, possibly, if this doesn't sell either and you turn around and release it with a Retina? I mean, there's such a break of trust here. And I also get why they're doing this. They're putting all their products at one time for the holidays. Every Apple product got refreshed. Everything. Nano, iPod Touch. Everything but the classic, you know?
And, yeah, that's dead.
And that's kind of interesting, too. And that might have some ramifications because now, do we still have the event in March? Do we still have OS X in June? I don't know. So
yeah, nobody knows. And maybe that's a good thing and maybe not. Maybe Apple wants to break out of the niche where they have to be beholden to this particular cycle.
My other issue here is that tablets are luxury items. Tablets are not something you have to have. A phone is something that we've all kind of been conditioned to buy every 2 years, subsidized, I might add, right? So you're spending $200, $300 plus a lot in a data plan. But a tablet is not something you're going to replace every 2 years unless you have a large family or someone to sell it off to in Gazelle or something like that. And in fact, I'm a weird person in that we have several tablets here in the house, and that's just not heard of in a lot of cases, because as much as people want to say that PCs are slowing in sales, and usually that happens before any Windows release anyway, tablets are still something that's coming new to people in the boardroom, in schools, and things like that. And I just don't know that you can have the product refresh cycle work in the same way that you do with phones. Because phones change so fast and so radically, I get that point. But I don't know when Apple hit saturation point on iPads. And certainly the fact that the 3 didn't sell as much, as said in the Apple's earning call, and 2 quarters in a row where things have started to slow, I do understand why market analysts are concerned for whatever reason. So again, this is something to watch. It's certainly something to see what goes on, because iPhone 5s can't be made at the speed that Apple wants them to be made at. And that'll affect their numbers too. And does that affect their product cycle?
One last thing I'd like to mention before we close out the Apple news and everyone claps. Apple seems dangerously complacent in a way, because as they released this iPad mini, they didn't, as was speculated, they didn't give us a reason why they were doing this. A lot of people thought that they would, they did release a new version of iBooks, but they didn't tie this in marketing-wise. They didn't say, here's the iReader or something like that, which would have made this make a little sense. They didn't say, this is why you want one of these. They just released it and basically went, we're Apple, we release stuff, therefore you want it, and kind of left it at that. And I think that is a dangerous road to be on.
And even scarier was, I think they'd made, and this will make some voiceover users happy, I think they made the continuous scroll feature specifically for the iPad mini, because the two-page layout of iBooks, it makes more sense in iPad and landscape, but not so much on a smaller tablet. Because, you know, when you're on the iPad in landscape, it's more like holding a small dime store novel in your hands, right? And it visually, it makes sense. It's columnized. Sighted people get the feeling that they're using a book, and flipping a page makes sense in that situation. In now they've, you know, corrected and done this continuous scroll, because if you're going to hold a 7-inch tablet in portrait mode, then one long, you know, column of text makes more sense there. So it was a benefit for us, but I also see why they kind of went in this direction. And I agree with you. There wasn't a 5-minute video about how great iBooks was, or, you know, kids in the classroom using it, or they updated the authoring, but spent like maybe 30 seconds on that. I had to go back and read it online about what they had done to change that. It felt really, really weird. And this whole event felt weird. And this is, that's where I start to go, okay, yes, this is the Tim Cook era. I have to readjust my expectations. Maybe it's me, not Apple.
It's not you. It's me.
No, I'm sorry, Cupertino.
Coming up after the break, we've got your user comments from the mailbag and roundabout.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody, to Stereo Talk 130. And it's at this point in the show that we open up the mailbag.
Yes, wow. Those digital paper cuts. This crazy time, not so many audio files flying around, but...
No, we actually went to the blog and took some comments from serotalk.com. We thank you so much for that. Also, we remind you that you can rate our wonderful podcast on iTunes, and we read those reviews as well. Remember that by rating the podcast, you allow other accessibility podcasts to be able to raise up as well. A rising tide lifts all boats. So please, if you can, go over to iTunes and rate us accordingly.
The first blog comment we have is related to my speaking about having gotten a new thermostat. And the commenter asks if I got a talking thermostat. If not, there is a link here that we'll put in the show notes that you should certainly check out. It's www.talkingthermostats.com/blind.shtml. I did not get a talking thermostat. Now, luckily, this one is very easy to use, although it would be nice to have it speak the current temperature and speak as I'm adjusting things. But luckily, again, it is easy enough to use that I don't find myself cursing it that much.
Until the bill comes in.
Yes.
Then this is all, you know, doggone thermostat. Well, maybe not those words exactly.
I got a talking thermostat a couple of years ago, and I got one of the Kelvins on clearance from APH, and word on the street,
word on the street is that
the talkingthermostats.com ones are better. I like having the talking thermostat, though. I think it's fantastic. Thing can't keep time worth a darn, though. Like, the clock is...
Got some other blindness devices that do the exact same problem.
The clock drifts like... Well, I just bought talking cube clock from RNIB. It's got a nice British male voice, and man, that sucker drifts too.
It's not Daniel.
No, it's not Daniel. It's, I don't know. He's not Daniel, but that drifts. I mean, like within 2 or 3 weeks, it was off by like 4 minutes.
Whoa.
Wow. That's considerable. It drifts.
I don't know. Maybe that.
Sorry, so, I didn't come into work today.
Your temperature could be off by 4 degrees too.
That would
be huge.
Yeah. So what I want to know from our UK listeners is, are hours slower in the UK?
is it like Australia? Does water go the other way when you flush the toilet? Is
time flows backward?
I'm telling you, it's the TARDIS. You know, you can only have a paradox generator work for so long without affecting direct physical time.
Yeah, watch that Blinovich limitation too.
Agreed, wholeheartedly. Oh, and there's our EOL mention for the week. On the Serotalk blog, we have another comment here from Mark, who's all the way up in the Great White Northy. And he talks about the iOS 6 maps issue. He has a sighted friend who goes out and hunts all the time. And he used it to be able to get to some of the side roads, or as he points out here in the blog post, forestry trunk roads. And these roads are kind of hard to spot or difficult, but his friend was able to use iOS maps pretty accurately to be able to get back and forth on these roads. And he, you know, that's a good point. Again, it's like we said, it matters where you are and how this relates to you, just like apps, just like any other personal experience. If you're finding that iOS 6 maps allow you to get wherever you need to go, then it's great. But there are times where you have to rely on testers. And if you had everybody using it in California, then there's a possibility that California works incredibly well. Andy Anako over in Boston talks about how he was off by 3 blocks in some cases on major metropolitan museums and others. So as those things are updated, it does get better. I mean, the place I moved to outside of Houston wasn't seen by Google Maps, and we had to actually make some requests to mapping services. And then my wife had to actually physically kind of click one area where it thinks you are, and then kind of click on another area to where it needs to be. And it took about a little less than a week, but they did accurately fix it. And now we show up, which is great, because I couldn't get deliveries here until that happened, because I didn't exist. I actually thought I was 30 miles away. So Apple is not immune to this. And like we said on the podcast, any 1.0 product these days does take a little bit of revisions, and you know, people have been doing maps for a long time and they still don't get it right. So I hear what Mark is saying here, and I totally agree. It's up to the individual.
We've got an email here from Stanley Luttrell, and he says your podcast really hit home when you talked about how sighted people mistake one blind person for another. He talks about having grown up and been mainstreamed in schools in the Bay Area. And example one of him being mistaken for somebody else was when he was blamed for beating up on a woman.
Okay.
Example two was he was accused of sitting on a railroad track while being drunk. People were absolutely convinced that it was him. Now, fast forward a little bit, and he had a sighted friend who actually thought he was dead.
Yikes.
Now, the friend only discovered otherwise during a conversation with some mutual friends, and his name came up, and, you know, the friend was, oh, he's not really dead? No, it was, in fact,
this other guy,
you know, perhaps the other blind guy who sat on the railroad tracks
in a drunken stupor.
One too many times.
I've said for years and years that sight is wasted on the sighted, and I
I so agree.
Stand by that.
So, So now we have something in common with 70 celebrities. We love
you, people, but you have some quirks.
I actually had that. I've got similar stories like this one. Went to a record store. There was a group appearing there, and I went to hear them play at the record store before they played at their main thingy at South by Southwest, which I also went to. But
nice.
This was a bunch of years ago. And they're playing, and then they finish, and I have them autograph my CD, and they say, "Hey, didn't we see you at a show up in Boston?" I said, "No, that wasn't me." She says, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm positive. This is the first show I've been to from y'all." And but I understand, all of us blind guys look alike. You know, it's
pretty much.
Time, he had a stick, yeah, just like that.
Yep.
Yes, actually, this was
very familiar.
This was pre-Carl, so
pre-dog. Okay, so I wonder, this is worth asking the question. Canes pretty much look alike. Dogs, I suppose, look alike,
in fact,
too,
even if they're,
if you have the,
no,
the
even
same
if they're not the
stuff,
same breed.
Even if they're different colors. The same breed.
I retired Carl at the end of 2002 and stopped taking him to work. And then I went to guide dog school in February 2003. And at the end of that time, I came back and I went into work. And this was when I was at Verizon for a short time, doing the second worst job in the world. That would be a directory assistance operator. The first worst job in the world is canvassing neighborhoods for estimates on installing double-paned windows, which I did for a couple of weeks in college. But anyway, walk in the door, and this someone says, "Oh, hey, buddies, I'm glad to see you back. Hey, and you brought Carl again." Well, Carl was a golden retriever, and Chet is a yellow lab. Carl was a bit taller, quite a bit longer, and about 6 years older.
But they were the same color, I suppose.
Sort
at least
of,
close.
I guess. I mean, like Carl was
I
kind of
if
a
you
red
get
golden.
Black ones and yellow ones mixed up.
No, but what scares me there is that they remembered the name of the guy. They might not remember your name.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Yeah,
oh, no,
they're never going to remember your name.
Yeah. Never, ever.
That's one I've seen a lot. And I used to see that in presentations when I was in government, was they would remember my coworkers' guides and then kind of sort of stand there, and I'd be like, "Oh, yeah, well, you remember Sharon, don't you?" And I,
you. Ugh, yeah.
Ugh. To be honest, my grandmother, as she started to slip away, remembered dogs that my wife and I had 15 years ago. So, I mean, maybe it's just something in the human condition that we latch on to animals in that way. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of throwing it out there for conversation purposes. But we do tend to, you know, especially if you're a cat or a dog person or a bird person, remember certain aspects about the animal sometimes more than the owner.
Now it's time for Roundabout. We have several stories in Roundabout this time. We may spend lots of time spinning around in here. The first story deals with media usage by children, and it's apparently skyrocketing. Now, they mostly talk about increase in text messages and that sort of thing, but they also talk about how the usage of TV has gone down dramatically in favor of internet or phone or texting.
Not a huge shocker here.
No,
it's really not.
And TV sales, I think, still decline.
I think the difference is that TV is not really interactive, and you're surrounded by so many different things that can be. Even if you're sitting there watching videos on YouTube all day, you can still write comments on those videos or read other people's comments. And I feel like, and honestly, I'm not entirely sure if this is a good thing, a bad thing, or just a thing that's happening. I think people are becoming more social. People are feeling more connected. People are spending more time thinking about themselves and where they fit into kind of the larger ecosystem of
humanity. See, and I've always said that technology and the internet would do this when people were alarming over, the internet is cutting us off from each other, and we're all being less social, and we're spending less time with each other, and we're retreating further into ourselves and all this sort of thing. I've always said that technology doesn't isolate us. In fact, brings us together, and I'm happy to see that in a way I'm being validated here.
Yes, this prediction is in fact correct. So did that break your record, or does this count really? It's kind of an overarching thing.
Well,
so
to his point,
I think your record is still intact.
To his point, all the wrap-up shows we did this year on SPN, whether it's ATIA, whether it's CSUN, whether it's the conventions at summer, everybody said it was more about having the tweet up or the meet up or being able to meet that person in the flesh rather than 140 characters. And for a lot of people, these conventions have now turned from the place to go to be able to see the latest Braille display to the place to go and exchange ideas in a more free-flowing fashion. Now, with that said, though, when I'm pulling a lot of stories for our podcast and Jamie as well, Jamie and I have sort of talked about this. I think also some of the things that I see is Netflix as a babysitter. And I see this more and more about, here, play with mommy's tablet and watch, you know, whatever SpongeBob or whatever's on Netflix because there's no commercials.
But that's not new.
No.
That's not at all new. I think the TV was the babysitter before now. Parents want something to distract their kids at times, and it's a balance to make sure that that's not all you do. But, you know, whether it's YouTube or Angry Birds or what have you, or whether it's go watch Sesame Street and that kind of thing, this is not new at all. It just manifests itself a little bit differently.
Yeah. Well, Jamie's traveling, and you know, he has said he's not looking for an excuse to get the new iPhone 5. But, you know, if things should so happen to accidentally, you know, go the wrong way, maybe he'd be in the market for the iPhone 5, because apparently there are just some places where you tend to destroy your phone more than others.
Yeah, well, since he's out of the house, it may actually be more safer for him right now as he's traveling. So
you hold it closer.
Yeah. You kind of think about, now, where would people have problems with their iPhones the most? Where is this most likely to break? And if you're thinking, lots of people dropping their phones in the toilet, that does happen.
Getting splashed by the shower, what have you.
Yeah, squirt toothpaste on it accidentally. That probably
happens, but that's not the most common one.
No, indeed. It's when you're standing there in your kitchen and you're frying up a mess of stuff and you have your iPhone sitting right beside that and maybe some grease splatters on it.
Southern,
or you're washing
iPhone
dishes and...
And you drop it down the garbage disposal.
That's right. Ooh, now I'd love to know what that sounds like.
Like a Victor Reader stream.
They've got all these YouTube videos. Is it a good idea to microwave a blank? And they've done it with an iPhone or an iPod, I forget which. But I think they should have a separate thing for the garbage disposal. Love to know what that sounds like. But yes, in the kitchen.
Will it blend like last week?
Right.
Will it dispose?
That's right. So, yeah, be careful when you're in the kitchen. Maybe you want to set this phone on a dock and just listen to music far, far away from where you're actually doing things in the kitchen. Water is the most common complaint for liquid damage. I thought, you know, beer and soda, coffee, that kind of thing. I thought that would be it. But no, it's water.
Who knew?
Who knew? Indeed.
I carry my iPad around a lot for podcasts and just have it on for white noise in the background and stuff. So my wife has gotten on me more than once. In fact, that's one of the reasons why she got me a case, because I would just take this thing around everywhere. And yeah, you know, to kitchen, here, there, wherever. I probably need to just look into getting Sonos or something like that. And leaving it in one spot. But yeah, I am this person with my iPad, I have to admit. Not so much my phone, not so much my Nexus, but definitely my big old iPad, because I love the speakers on the iPad One.
Wonder what it smells like if you were frying something up and you splashed grease on your electronics and shorted things out.
A Southern Fried iPad,
Southern
right?
Southern Fried iPad, yes. Yeah, you iPad. Could send this smell to your friends, apparently, using something developed in Japan.
Smellophone for you.
Man.
That's right, smellophone.
Finally, all those fart apps have meaning on the iOS store.
There you go.
Yep, you just interface it with this device, and I'm not entirely clear how this works. It's some kind of sensory, it's filled
it's filled with some kind of essence of whatever.
Yeah, which I guess gets combined in different ways if you're trying to transmit a smell. They're talking about the...
Yeah, they're talking about, like, you go to a concert and you buy the smell cartridge for whatever and like...
A bunch of sweaty bodies.
Yeah, sweaty body smell. That sounds attractive.
Not what I've smelled at concerts, or at least certain concerts. Pink Floyd.
There could be that as well, maybe, but maybe not. But the performer's sweat.
Well, let me just say, seeing Pink Floyd in the Astrodome, it's hard not to smell, you know, certain things. But yeah, anyway.
So I'm curious as to how this works, and I would love it if this would come to America. It's not just Japan who needs smell-o-vision or smell-o-phone.
No. Here's the scenario, right? You leave your iPhone in the room, right? Mm-hmm. And then you iMessage yourself to trigger this thing, and then it releases the smell, and you're not even there.
Interesting.
So, yeah. And so the dog gets blamed.
There you go.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Wait.
Dog gets blamed anyway.
Well, that's true.
Why not just make it smell like blind people running marathons?
Whoa. You know,
if they smell any differently than sighted people running marathons, but you could
do that. Or the concert.
You could.
I've always been curious.
I like Runkeeper and stuff, but I may be allergic to running. I'm not sure. I'll have to check with my doctor.
Yeah.
But I think it's awesome that people do run marathons.
Yeah, as long as it's other people.
I mostly...
That's right.
All speaking as tech people. Did you catch that at home, everybody? That's very much a Big Bang moment right there.
That never sees the sun and...
That's correct. But, you know, Maury Hill on High Contrast runs, and she's talked about this on previous episodes and how she enjoys... running, God bless her, because that's not my thing. I like walking. I like walking fast, but not necessarily running, unless it's an open track or maybe, I don't know, the Utah Salt Flats where there's fewer obstacles. But it's great that people are doing this, and this article talks a little bit about what it's like to be a marathoner.
This is really cool. I always wondered about this, and I still have some questions about it. Essentially, the marathon runner will have a rope in one hand, and there is the sighted guide who has the other end of the rope and will be mentioning directions, you know, a little right and that kind
of thing. Blind runner coming through!
Yeah.
It's like skiing all over again.
And they switch off runners every now and again so that...
That's something new that I had learned, because I was wondering, the big question I had about that was, if a blind person... is running a marathon, they're never going to win because the sighted guide has to be faster, but I guess maybe not.
Right.
not if they trade them off every so often.
You need to train a little better.
Yeah. And that
you're slowing me down, Carl.
That was what my question was about. Even if you're switching off runners, and the article even mentions that the guy who's running this marathon, Eddie Montanez, they switched out a runner who was new and hadn't run with him before, and he's approaching the finish line, and the rope is kind of getting jerky, and it gets taut and then loose and taut again because she's tired, but she's dragging on, and okay, we'll get to the finish line. Now, how can you make sure that all of the runners you get are fast enough for you?
Or blind runner comes in second because, like Buddy said, your guide is always going to come in first. Is that like odds are stacked against you? The flip side of that is that you're tied to the chase car, and then you need roller skates.
Good stuff.
Well, that's just about going to do it for episode 130. You can always let us know what you think about this episode or any of our shows on the Serotalk Podcast Network by reaching over and getting an iReport right from iBlink Radio, available over on iBlink Radio on the iOS store or Android store. You can also call us in on the Blab line. And you can always leave us an email, resources@serotalk.com. Contact us on Twitter, twitter.com/serotalk. And of course, you can follow all of us individually. If you really want to catch up on a lot of the stories between the week, following Serotalk, following mine, which is Ranger Station, all one word, or Ricky_Enger, or Jamie Paul's or Buddy B. Brannon. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
Isn't, yep. That's your, so that's the one over there for TripleClick. So you can catch a lot of what we're talking about during the week. Honestly, guys, there's like sometimes 30, 50 stories in a day. It all depends how crazy it is. We just kind of pulled the best ones of the week and put them together. So if you want to stay even more up to date, you can follow us on Twitter. Even if you don't read Twitter through any of the clients out there, you can go to the Twitter page and just read down the page. That's a good experience as well. So for the absent Jamie Pauls, for myself, Joe Steinkamp, for Ricky, and thank you, buddy, for sitting in.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate all of you, and we look forward to seeing you on episode 131. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great week.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.